Chapter 88. It wasn't yet dawn of Sunday when Karis and Commander Ironfist and their squad rode into sight of Big Jasper. Exhausted from skimming all the way to Wrath and then fighting, they hadn't been able to get all the way back before they ran out of daylight, even on the eve of the longest day of the year. It was only because of Ben-Hadad, young genius, that they'd been able to navigate the rest of the way home with the stars. He'd drafted a perfectly working mariner's astrolabe from memory, calculated their latitude, estimated their rowing speed, remembered the latitude of Big Jasper, told them they could make it by dawn if they rowed all night, and kept them on course. Mostly. Karis had thought that the enormous spires of the Chromeria would be impossible to miss, but late in the night a low mist kicked up, and though they could still take their bearing by the stars still visible overhead, they found themselves west of Big Jasper, having overshot Little Jasper entirely.
"It's just as well,"
Ironfist said quietly. He and Karis had this last shift on the oars. The others were still asleep. It was almost time to wake them, though.
"There will be light guards at the Chromeria's dock. I'm not handing Gavin over to them."
"He needs chirurgeons before anything. West dock isn't far from Amalu and Adini's."
They were the best chirurgeons on the Jaspers, maybe in all the satrapies. They'd made a fortune treating nobles and colours for 2 decades, but then had freed their slaves and taken a religious oath to treat the poor of Big Jasper.
"Karis,"
Ironfist said after a few more long sweeps,
"it's Sunday. If we don't bring Gavin to the Spectrum today, they're not going to stop naming a new prism on our word alone."
"You saw his eyes," Karis said.
"Aye." She felt dead inside. A pause.
"Blue."
"Then you know. Hope is dead. We've lost."
Gavin knew it too. When night had fallen and they could draft no longer, he had insisted that he help row. It was one thing he was good at, he'd said. But soon he'd passed out, overcome by his wounds and long privation. Karis looked at him now, still asleep on the deck, his gouged-out eye bandaged as well as they could. She had wanted to see her husband and simply rejoice that he was alive, that he was hers once again, but the first thing she noticed, and it had overwhelmed her love and her relief and her hope, wasn't the dirt or the bloody grin or the ruined hand or the burnt-out eye or the black hair dye or the long beard or his indomitable spirit. It was his good eye, his blue eye, his icy-bright, intelligent, natural blue eye. And they'd come to rescue a prism. Instead, they'd rescued a man. They'd done the impossible, 5 of them rescuing a man from 50,000, and it was for nothing.
"This isn't how prisms die,"
Ironfist said, keeping his voice barely above a whisper.
"When I was named Commander of the Black Guard, they told me what to look out for. Nothing about Gavin Guile has been normal."
"What is?" Karis asked.
"I'm not supposed to say. Last thing we need is every blackguard playing chirurgeon, wondering if she should obey her prism or if he's going mad."
He looked away and said,
"It's not the first sign, but eventually they get color in their irises, and eventually they break the halo, just like the rest of us."
"But,"
Karis said, obviously that wasn't what was happening here. Not at all.
"That's not all. There's a ceremony every 7 years. I don't know what happens, but the first time I had the distinct feeling that Gavin hadn't made enough friends, and he wasn't going to be prism afterward. But an odd thing happened. They never had the ceremony, and Gavin kept being prism. After that, everything changed. If you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't have seen it. But the composition of the spectrum changed drastically. Married black, killed himself, but he'd long struggled with melancholy, and we found a note. The blue left immediately after Sunday and was killed in a shipwreck, possibly while fleeing pirates. The green retired, and since has died. The yellow was called home to Abornia and died months later after being thrown from a horse. The subred withdrew to his estate on Big Jasper and didn't leave until his death 2 years later, supposedly of drink and lotus-eating. Dalara Orange's mother somehow emerged from what had been called ruinous debts. She had been gone for much of the previous few years, missing meetings while she tried to beg, borrow or steal money to keep her house together, but was suddenly present for every meeting. Only the superviolet and red seemed unchanged. It was spread out over so much time, and the news of some of these didn't come for 6 or 8 months later, that everyone was already engaged in manoeuvring over who would take those seats. And Gavin, and the white, and the red, and the Hyluxiates, and the satraps, and everyone else who was anyone, jumped into those fights. No one party emerged as a total victor. I'm certain of that. I've kept tally of the close votes, especially the close votes Andros has won. He didn't buy or suborn all the new colours. It's been 9 and 10 years or more now. It would have been clear by now if he had them all under his thumb, which is probably the other reason everyone wrote off the changes as coincidence. Who would overturn a colour if they didn't have a plan to put in a friendlier face? But I watched again, 3 years ago now, at the 14-year mark. No one was nervous. No one moved their families around, arranged visits, or wills, or escapes. There were no contenders to be the next prism, and the day passed in peace. I don't know what happened. I've searched the libraries and every history I can find, but there are no mentions of how a prism is named. None. Not even speculation, which tells me the lack is deliberate. This is not the work of one man expunging some records, like I thought at first. It must be the work of generations of men doing that. Think even of the oral histories, which can't be stopped, even if they speak only of parties and gathering of the spectrum and satraps and luxiates, with a whiff of the usual politicking, and at the end always, always, total unity and agreement with Orholm having spoken. I know these men, and Orholm could show up in a pillar of fire in the middle of the room and turn half the councillors into goats, and the other half would still not be in total agreement and unity afterward. And I can tell when Gavin is ready for a challenge, or a fight, or even a game. He doesn't contain his excitement. He doesn't even try. And he's not been excited, because he doesn't know. I've never been sure whether I should be glad the prism isn't part of this conspiracy, or terrified because of that. But this, his eyes, they prove to me that we're facing something unprecedented.
But Carys was thinking about something altogether different. Gavin had appeared to be oblivious to all the angling going on under his nose because he was Dazen, and he was petrified. He hadn't known what secret alliances Gavin might have made, and he hadn't known or probably had any way to find out about the ceremony without exposing his real identity. And perhaps no one had bothered trying to enlist his aid for their schemes because they thought he would be dead when they carried them out. Gavin had been absent half the time, hunting down whites with Carys and others in every arc of the 7 satrapies. When he was home, he was pressed into rituals of all sorts, appearances for new discipuli, and even teaching lectures. He sometimes thought his high position meant he could simply ignore the political currents swirling around his ankles like a giant crossing a stream. There were layers upon layers of secrets, and at the bottom of any you might happen to excavate, you might find that it had all been a plot to marry this daughter to that son of a higher class, or to displace another family that had valuable shipping contracts, or a bastard son, or a gambling habit. On the other hand, feeling in good health, Gavin might have never even realized that others were plotting what to do when he suddenly died, and then he hadn't suddenly died. Who would tell him that they had been planning how to take advantage of his sudden death? Of course, if he hadn't thought it all beneath him, if he'd turned his mind fully to controlling the spectrum, he would have noticed. But Gavin was no Andros, and Gavin had always his own secret to protect. How much had that hobbled him? If someone made a veiled comment that they expected the real Gavin to understand, would Gavin have demanded they explain, or would he have shied away instead? Shied away. Every time. He'd hated talking about the war, though he must have practiced those lies to perfection. Hated talking about the past, period. And he'd done everything he could to make none of it matter. Disrupting old alliances, forging new ones, destroying powers, and dispensing justice where he could, regardless of where those receiving it had stood in the war. It had made him a great prism, but it had also made him blind to the knives at his back. Which was fine, as long as he was so powerful that no one dared use those knives. There was more there. Something she was missing. A piece she'd been handed. But Caris was tired from rowing half the night, and worrying, and yesterday's fighting had left her bruised and battered, and they weren't home yet.
"You've got a secret," Iron Fist said. "Something I said made you realize something."
"Yes," Caris said.
She wanted to explain it all to her commander, her old friend who'd saved her life on a number of occasions, whom she trusted perhaps more than Gavin himself, but she said nothing but,
"I'm sorry."
He nodded.
"She said you'd say that."
"Huh?"
"The white. She said at some point you'd cut me off, exclude me from your councils. She said you'd apologize for it. She said that would be the moment when you were finally a blackguard no more, and that it wasn't a bad thing, but it would hurt, and that it was her fault, not yours."
Caris shook her head.
"You ever think what a pain it is to work with people who are smarter than you?"
"No, never,"
Iron Fist said. Simple statement of fact. Because he didn't. But when she shot him a look, he was smirking. She couldn't help but grin back, for an instant.
"Damn it," she said. "Hezek, that asshole."
That dead asshole. Their colleague.
"He was intolerable,"
Iron Fist agreed.
"Heard he tried to claim that miracle shot you made at Rue," Caris said.
"Asshole,"
Iron Fist said. And they chuckled. They knew when you had to laugh, as warriors know.
"So what do we do?" she asked.
"The White said once you cut the strings, that you'd be ready to start giving orders. Your command, Lady Guile."
It was true. She knew what needed to be done. Caris woke the others, excepting only Gavin, who needed the sleep to heal. She gestured to the lightning sky.
"The commander and I need to get back to the Chromeria. We're already going to be too late for the dawn rituals. Essel, you and Ben-Hadad are going to take the Lord Prism to Amalu and Ardini's. You know it?"
Essel nodded.
"If you have to refer to him by name, you call him Hezek. You understand? It won't bear scrutiny, but perhaps Hezek will protect the Prism in death as he did in life. We'll send any backup we can. Don't hand him over to the Light Guard, no matter what."
With Gavin's hair dyed dark and his beard grown in, and so much of his skin wrapped in bandages, and with all the weight he'd lost, he certainly didn't look like the Prism of old. She saw by the end of her orders that Gavin was awake. He stood and took Iron Fist's cloak, swaddling himself in the big garment and throwing the hood on. Soon it would be too warm for such, and cause more questions than it staved off, but for the moment it was the right move. He looked up at her, and the movement must have broken a scab, because she saw him wince, and wince again, and a dribble of fresh blood escaped from under his bandage, and coursed down his cheek. He steadied himself on Essel's shoulder.
"Just when I think I have your measure, dear Caris," he said,
his voice low but steady in spite of the pain. "You exceed my expectations all over again. I am blessed and honored above all deserving to have you as my bride. But you are right. You must go. My father will have planned mischief and worse for this day. You can't help them heal me, and you can't stop him from here. Go, my love.
Go.